You ever wonder what the point of life is? Why we're squatting on this big hunk of space rock that is traveling across the sun, that we're slowly poisoning, and will eventually be consumed by entropy? Oh yeah, that's right, it's to subscribe to fellow artists' Patreons, such as myself, an artist! Patreon.com/MatthewDonald. There you can find bonus content for both my shows, The Ritwin and Paleobites. For the Paleobites bonus content, we discuss pop culture featuring prehistoric animals. And this month, we're talking about... That's right! We're finally doing it! Jurassic Park! The book. The original book from 1990 by Michael Crichton. The one that the movie was based off of. Did you know it was based off a book? I didn't! Of course you did. Link is in the description for where you can sign up to the Patreon. Thank you for your support. Have a lovely day. And find your purpose in life. We all need a purpose. Maybe just go out and look at leaves. Smell the roses. Take a long walk on the beach at a cool summer night.
Roar. Growl. Snarl. Bellow.
Welcome to Paleobites, the podcast whose only fans account is a Mayasaura. My name's Matthew Donald, and each week I and a rotating series of guest co-hosts talk about and rate a genus of prehistoric animal, be it dinosaur, mammal, arthropod, and so on. This week I'm joined by someone who was just doing a rant on Dragon Ball Z. It's Ben O'Regan, how are you?
I don't remember.
Your voices are funny.
Donald Duck. It's one of the few voices I can actually do reliably.
I can't talk.
You used to be able to do a somewhat decent Mickey Mouse, but as everyone knows, your body goes through changes when you get older. I can't do it anymore.
Oh, it's me, Mickey. I mean, my Mickey Mouse sounds more like Julia Child. Like,
no, you sound more like the South Park Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I actually wouldn't be surprised if they do, like, if Disney keeps acquiring stuff, they do an episode where Mickey Mouse comes to prison and he's just, like, walking down the National Mall, whatever you call it, in DC to the White House while Be Prepared or Imperial March is playing.
No, it's like, yeah, no, Mickey Mouse is dominated. It's like, and, like, apparently, it's funny because, like,
I'm actually surprised they haven't been broken up yet. Surely there's going to be some antitrust law or anti-monopoly law from, Teddy Roosevelt stage that they're violated by now.
I don't know. I feel like they'll probably have some sort of contract where, like, they'll keep the public, they'll keep the rights to it as long as they just keep using it. That probably be some sort of loophole they do rather than extending it. This is something I was going to bring up though. That I think this is historically very true. I'm not making this up. Hitler loved Mickey Mouse.
Honestly, isn't surprising. Hitler liked quite a few American things.
Well, and it's not just like, it was like, oh, what an interesting character, or like, what a charming little thing. He liked the fact that the symbol, the silhouette of Mickey Mouse was so recognizable and could inspire so many people to do so many things. So yes, one could say the silhouette of Mickey Mouse inspired the swastika.
Well, to be fair, a lot of nations have had easily recognizable insignias, like the eagles being, variations of the eagle have been used for years, lions and so on.
On a much less dark note about Mickey Mouse, one thing, fact I learned about him that's very interesting is that no matter what angle he's drawn at, his ears are always remain at equidistance. This is so that he can preserve his silhouette no matter what angle he's drawn at. Like, you never see him with his ears intersecting. No matter what angle his head is drawn at, his ears are always evenly spaced out. So that way he can always retain that classic silhouette.
You know, if you turn him upside down, he looks like Among Us.
He does, doesn't he? All right. Ooh, okay. Okay, so let's say Disney loses copyright to Mickey Mouse in this Dreamland scenario. And they have to replace their silhouette with a dinosaur. Which dinosaur?
Easy. Eladar, make it Iguanodon. He's Disney's dinosaur. It's one of their best movies.
It is. Okay, yeah, Eladar. That's right. Obvious choice. Now, obviously, he's not like a silhouette. He's not easily silhouettable. Maybe do the Carnotaur.
Well, that or they just purchase Barney and then just have the big poop dork on as their symbol.
Yeah, that could work. I do like Dinosaur, though. It's kind of funny, like, you either love Dinosaur, but a lot of people, like, a lot of Disney fans I know, find the movie boring, and I'm like, why? It's so good!
It's basically a darker Land Before Time.
It is, like, but that seems to be
That's good.
That seems to be a very common complaint I've seen, is that it's boring.
People don't seem to recognize the Land Before Time was originally going to be a very dark film, in addition to them not talking, like, Secret and Nim style. Don Bluth actually does really dark kids' cartoons.
He does. Well, Well, even like his last movie he did was Titan A.E., which I actually quite like. But that was
I love that. That and Anastasia were good.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so yeah, like Aladar, that's a good choice.
Ironically, Anastasia, everyone used to think she was a Disney princess, not realizing it was Fox. Now she actually is a Disney princess.
Yes, she is technically a Disney princess now.
Although, to rain on everyone's parade, not only is that movie inaccurate, because again, it's a movie in Rasputin being a magic devil man when he was a really weird Orthodox priest historically.
Yeah, exactly.
But, we definitely know she didn't survive. The bodies of her and her little brother have been found.
Well, that's the thing. They,
over a decade ago.
To be fair, they weren't found when the movie came out. But yeah.
Yeah, and there was that woman called Anna Anderson who, for years, passed herself off as Anastasia. Turns out she wasn't. She was some American, if I recall.
Right. Well, it's like also, you know, I heard for the marketing of that movie because like they looked at the mistakes that Disney made with Pocahontas, which was another historical character they turned into a fairy tale. And what Disney did in the marketing for that was, even though it was clearly a legend and a fairy tale, they marketed it as like, this was the historical tale. And those like people watched it, this isn't historical. While marketing Anastasia in Russia, they made it very, very clear in the marketing that this is a fairy tale. This is a fantasy Disney princess-style fairy tale that happens to be about his historical character. And Russia loved Anastasia as a result. Like, they marketed it very well in Russia. So,
just to finish it off, if people do ever look into the actual development history of Disney's dinosaur, it was actually very different. It was initially going to be set like where the asteroid would come at the end and they would all die. Aladar was meant to be a Styracosaurus, and it was originally going to be directed by Paul Verhoeven, who did Robocop, Hollow Man, Starship Troopers, and similar films.
Really? I also heard that there was like a draft of it that was kind of more religious, too. Like, some of the dinosaurs were named like Adam and Eve.
Yeah, they were basically heading to the Garden of Eden or something. Because it originally started out once Disney started getting interested, because it went through different studios, as it was meant to be like a movie made out of the dying of the dinosaurs, bit of, what is it, Fantasia?
Right, yeah.
So see, people, you do learn things when we rant.
Exactly. So, and also, like, that movie was, it was developed by apparently this short-lived animation company called Secret Lab Studios.
Yeah, it wasn't Pixar.
And also, it wasn't technically the Disney Animation Department at the time. It was retroactively added to the Disney Animated Canon in, like, 2008, I think I heard. So...
And it has aged very well, effects-wise. Like, like most Pixar films still look good, but you can clearly tell this is 90s CGI, this is mid-2000s CGI because of the quality change, even, like, beyond the Pixar style. But, like, this still looks top-notch.
It does. There are some close-ups where, like, you can tell the textures are a little bit old, but those are few and far in between, so...
Yeah, you don't get cases like where if you're rewatching the original Jurassic Park where the Brachiosaurus is clearly CGI, even if it's aged... Or like when you watch the CGI bits of Walking with Dinosaurs and sometimes parts of the dinosaurs inevitably clip through the rest of the model.
Yeah, exactly. And they're kind of blurry. But yeah. So, speaking of Walking with Dinosaurs, perfect segue. And also speaking of retroactively, sort of like how Disney's dinosaur was retroactively added to Disney animated canon. This is
what the polar allosaur actually is.
Yes, this was retroactively added into Walking with Dinosaurs. So we're talking about Australovenator or Southern Hunter.
Yeah, and it's actually a Megaraptor.
Yeah, exactly. Type is a Megaraptor in theropod, a group of meat-eating dinosaurs with controversial relations to other theropods. Like, we just don't know where they should be classified. So,
Sometimes they're being reclassified as a subset of Allosaurids, Vercacarodontosaurids and stuff. Other times they're offshoot of Megalosaurids, which apparently so are Spinosaurids.
Right.
And then sometimes they get placed close to Tyrannosaurs, which
does
my head in.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I talk all about that here in a second.
Basically, with dinosaurs, never take anything for granted when it comes to classification. It's changing all the damn time.
Exactly. It's changing all the time, and that's why I think it's so funny when people, like, get onto something for not being 100% paleontologically accurate. I'm like, nothing is 100% paleontologically
accurate.
It's like,
get over it. Like, on one hand, there's the old retro reconstructions, but stuff from as recently as the late 80s, early 90s that you'd see in Jurassic Park, like the shrink-wrapped dinosaurs were still considered accurate until a decade ago, so...
Yeah, exactly.
What you think's accurate now, if you look back at it 100 years from now, whether we're still here or it's like if the human lifespan increases, or it's, you know, descendants, assume we don't all die out, right, they're probably going to look back on what we know now and think, oh, those idiots.
Exactly, and that's good. That shows our knowledge is improving. But I just think, like, documentaries are one thing. Like, as of recording right now, this has probably come out by this point, but there's that Prehistoric Planet trailer, which looks great. And it looks like super paleontologically accurate, super cool, super high budget. It's like the modern Walking with Dinosaurs. But
definitely have to see it then. I don't normally watch dinosaur documentaries because most of them are just quite generic.
But no, this one,
this
one is produced by Jon Favreau, and it's narrated by David Attenborough. The music is Hans Zimmer. Ooh. And
I'm definitely watching it. Say no more.
Yeah, and it's very high budget. So like it.
Because I've seen there's a dime a dozen cheap Discovery productions.
No, this one's all out. So. Like,
yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, when it's the exception, I'll watch it. When it's just your generic crap, I'm not going to watch it.
Exactly. Anyways, so when this trailer came out, people were like, well, it looked really good, but then certain people on paleo source sites were like, oh, this is good, and the Jurassic World one suck. And I'm like, yeah, one's a movie and one's a documentary.
Yeah, plus, Jurassic World, we're actually seeing more accurate dinosaurs now, and two, they're theme park monsters, you idiots.
Exactly.
Stop getting so touchy. Jurassic Park has never claimed to be accurate.
Also, and I've said this before on other episodes, people are like, oh, the first one was as accurate as possible at the time. Like, no one could tell me that with a straight face with that movie with that Dilophosaurus. Like, my thing with art and other stuff like that, in terms of, like, fiction, is, like, all you are beholden to is the style, tone, and vibe you are going for. A dinosaur-related work could go for dinosaurs that are as up-to-date and accurate as possible, or they could go all out and have them like 1950s style slurposaurs and also give them lightning breath. And either would be
dinosaurs as dragons,
and either would be perfectly acceptable if that is the vibe the story is going for, because art is not beholden to reality. Anyway, so where was I? Okay, so it's a Megaraptoran theropod, size 20 to 22 feet, so that's 6.5 meters long, 1,100 to 2,200 pounds, or 500 to 600 kilograms. It was a carnivore, time mid-Cretaceous, 96 to 94 million years ago, location Australia. It was described in 2009, and keep that in mind, because pop culture appearances retroactively in Walking with Dinosaurs, which came out in 1999. Came out in 1999, so, but it was described.
Yeah, because the Centimore itself was only properly described in 2009 by someone called Scott Knockhull.
Right, exactly. So,
or Hocknull or something.
In A Walking with Dinosaurs, it was only depicted as like the dwarf or polar allosaur. It was based on fragmentary remains at the time that hadn't been officially described yet. Once it was formally described, BBC was like, yeah, that's what that was, and updated the Walking with Dinosaurs website to call it an Australovinate.
They did the same thing with Walking with Monsters when they covered the Megarachnia, which they renamed to Amisophile, because it turned out the actual animal they were depicting as the giant land spider was actually the fossil remains of a sea scorpion or something.
Exactly. No, they do that a lot. Like, also, like, in Walking with Beasts, in the third episode with the Intricatheres, they have a Calicatheer there, even though this was not at a time when a Calicatheer would have lived or, like either time or place. But they wanted to show Calicatheres, so that's why they called it Calicatheres, which is the family, rather than like a specific genus, because they're like, okay, this is just a Calicatheres that we haven't described yet.
It's much more forgivable than showing blooming Utahraptor in the European
Islands. Exactly. It's called Utahraptor. Like, what is it doing in Europe? Particularly when there's a whole ocean in between them. It's not like Pangaea. So
I'm pretty sure it was meant to be a stand-in for just some obscure dromaeosaurid, but...
Well, yeah, because, like...
They didn't even try.
Yeah, because, like, I don't even know... I mean, no, there were a few raptors known in Europe back then, like Pyroraptor and, like, Variraptor, but, yeah. Anyway, so, dinosaurs were everywhere. Every continent had a vast ecosystem full of dinosaurs from the top to the globe to the bottom. Helping this was the warmer climate and lack of polar ice caps during the Mesozoic era, which meant that even at the South Pole, there were thick forests full of creatures. That didn't mean it wasn't cold, especially in the winter, but this was still very livable. And you might be wondering why I'm bringing up the South Pole when talking about dinosaurs from Australia, but that's because the early Cretaceous Australia was not only much further south than it is today, but was also fused with Antarctica and South America.
And it was cold enough down there that if you've seen Walking of Dinosaurs, you should know that they probably didn't have crocodilians down there, which was why late surviving Temispondyls like...
Coolosuchus, yeah.
What did they call... Yeah, Coolosuchus hung on down there.
Exactly. So, so all the way back in 1903, the first ever dinosaur fossil found in Australia was discovered by William Hamilton Ferguson, a large theropod claw that was dubbed the Cape Patterson claw. While the owner of this claw has still not been fully determined, the fossil, combined with scattered unnamed remains of theropod dinosaurs found in the 90s, was enough for the producers of Walking with Dinosaurs to include it in their segment featuring Australian dinosaurs near the South Pole. Apparently, the producers stated they needed a large predator, and this was the closest they had.
Hmm.
Since the Cape Patterson claw looked similar to those of allosaurids, they named it the dwarf or polar allosaur and called it a survivor from the Jurassic times, where the other theropods thrived elsewhere. This isn't entirely unfounded, as the Carcharodontosaurs were closely related to the allosaurs, and those lived around that time.
Yeah, and you do get cases of like relic species themselves. They probably figure, well, we've already got Coolosuchus, what's a polar allosaur?
Yeah, exactly. However, in 2009, enough studies of the fossil fragments have been implemented to formally describe the specimen in which they belonged, and that was Australovenator, the southern hunter. Through all these studies, which persisted long into the 2010s, it was determined that Australovenator, the alleged dwarf allosaur, wasn't allosaurid in the conventional sense, but a megaraptorin, a mysterious group of theropods that go back and forth in being more closely related to the tyrannosaurs or the allosaurs or, I don't know, other things.
Even the abelisaurids.
Yeah. Currently, they're presumed to be within the Neovenator clade of theropods, which are a subclade of the Carcharodontosaurids, and thus, in a roundabout way, allosaurs. It all comes together. But cladograms are a mess. In life, Australovenator was the apex predator of its region, with evidence that of hunting at the rabidontid ornithopod Muttaburosaurus and even the titanosaurid sauropod Diamantinosaurus.
Yeah, which wasn't particularly large.
It was about 50 feet long, which is big, but not, like, crazy big.
Not by sauropod standards.
Like, I remember when we did, like, that episode of Rapidosaurus from Madagascar. I'm like, this is big, but not, like, big, big. And we went on and on and on. I loved that episode.
Basically, it would dwarf many mammals, except maybe the Endrycophians, but, yeah, a small fry by sauropod standards, average, roughly.
I know, I love that episode, because at the end, we go on, like, this five-minute rant, where it's like when you go to a zoo and see an African elephant, but then you see an Asian elephant. It's like when you order the dinner entree of a Chinese restaurant, but then you get the lunch entree. It's like if you order a baking size fry, but you get a medium fry. And we just went on for 5 minutes. It was very funny. So
I think that's still in there, isn't it?
It is. It's very funny. Anyway, so since Diamantinosaurus, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't huge, but it was still 50 feet long, and this was 20 feet long.
Hmm.
So for Norfolk,
it's still a pretty impressive animal, but not like game-changing like Argentinosaurus or Brachiosaurus.
But like, in order for Australovenator to hunt them, they probably had to do so cooperatively, i.e. pack hunting. So where was that in the Walking with Dinosaurs episode?
Hmm.
Although...
Well, again, they didn't have much to go on, but then
exactly.
They did show Allosaurus as being a pack hunter in that.
Exactly. Also, to be fair,
then why would you need pack hunting when you're feeding on the Yelenosaurus?
Exactly. Also, to be fair, Diamantinosaurus was also described in 2009, 10 years after the show, and with no prior evidence to speculate such an animal like Australovenator had. So, oh well. But
yes, one thing people might not know is Australia's fossil record is pretty impoverished.
It is. Well, and sort of a thing. It's like, there are certain areas of the world that might be full of fossils, and we just haven't really explored them yet. It's
like what we were talking about between East and West Coast America back when they had the inland sea, and it was Laramedia and
Appalachia.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Like, we've got the East Coast Tyrannosaurus, the Dryosaurus, or Dryptosaurus, however you pronounce it, but we don't have a whole lot in the way of other animals there. There's some hadrosaurs and stuff, but again, not a whole lot.
Well, and who knows? There might be a quarry there that we haven't found yet. It's like, sort of like how, like, in China, like, a lot of finds recently are coming from China, but that's because, like, we started looking in China, like, in the 90s. We didn't start a lot earlier.
Yeah.
So,
and who knows how many fossils from China we're never going to see because they were considered dragon bone and used in blowing the folk medicines over
there.
Yeah,
well, sort of like, look, one thing to give it over rhino horns, at least the animal's already dead, but it's still not good. All right, let's rate Australovenator 1 out of 65 million. 59 million from my end. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm
just thinking, 15 million or maybe 14 million, you know, basically 1/4 of the rating system, if I can give it, because it's Australian and
well,
no one
15
should...
million?
Yeah, 15 million out of 65 million, I'll rate it because
Ouch.
It's an Australian and I'm obligated by the Australian-New Zealand rivalry to rate it lower.
Yeah, I get that. You got to have your pride, you know, whatever. That's it for this week. If you want to get a hold of the show, you can contact me at mattd@matthewdoncareer.com. Free general questions to either co-host. You can follow me on social media at MatthewDonCreate on Facebook, at MatthewDon64 on Twitter, and MatthewDon64 on Instagram. I have also have a book series on Amazon, Megazoic, available for print and Kindle. Who knows if I used an Australopithecus in there? I don't know which species I used. It's been so long since I've written these. So I also have another podcast called The Ritwit, where two twits talk about writing. That's it for this week. As we say at the end of every episode of Paleobites, RAAAAAAAR!
Are you reading the manga?